Welcome to episode 129 of the GSD Entrepreneur Podcast with your hosts, Jules and Statoya.
Running a successful business never comes without its challenges, but it also includes a lot of highs. In this GSD Entrepreneur Podcast, we explore both. We dive into what it looks like when entrepreneurs are committed to getting done. These are people who are pursuing their dreams, so we dig deep to understand how they are doing it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Lee Days is a force to be reckoned with in all the good ways. She's a native Charlestonian, so her love for, roots to, and knowledge of Charleston run deep. She's a big thinker, she's a speaker, she's a mentor, she's a change agent, and she believes strongly in the no asshole policy. Now that's our kind of person. She's connected and she's a connector. She's as witty as they come. She cares deeply about her team and she's smart. Really smart, as evidenced by her efforts and focus in founding her own successful marketing company called Obviously Marketing and her partnership in two other successful startups, CityBot and Island Coastal Lager. At the end of every day, Lee's mission is to help people grow really cool companies. We hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome, GSD Entrepreneur listeners, to yet another podcast episode. We have been doing this now for what?
2.5 years.
Over 2 years, yeah. And I think we're on episode number almost 130, so right in the
high. I was about to say 1,000.
High.
We're busy. Yeah,
with all the expertise that we've gained from gleaning this, I feel like we've done 1,000 episodes in all the good ways. But we are in the studio today, this humble little studio we have here with in front of the microphone, and I'm here with my, as always, beautiful co-host, Statoya.
I don't feel so beautiful today. No. I am sleepy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you need a shot of something.
I probably didn't need to go to sleep.
Maybe. But we are also in the studio with a fantastic new friend that we've met as a result of being a women-owned certified business. Mm-hmm. But her name is Lee Days. And if you're feeling exotic, like I was earlier, you can call her Dayaz.
Yes, preferably.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Preferably. Yes. So it's Lee, L-E-E, and then D-E-A-S. So listeners, how would you pronounce that? Days, right? That's exactly what I thought. But so Lee Days, and Lee is the owner, the founder, the owner of a marketing firm here in Charleston called Obviously Marketing. Who knows how she got that name, Obviously.
It's a mystery.
It's very creative. You're obviously a marketing firm.
I would say it's either cheesy or clever, and it just kind of depends on what mood you're in.
I'd go clever. All day.
Yeah, as a marketer, I should never even lead with cheesy being an option.
No. And your last name is Diaz. Right. So why would you ever be cheesy?
Yeah, I just need to embody that person.
But, you know, it's funny. We have been running around each other now for a couple of years because we have mutual friends and as a lot of the listeners know, we have a coaching firm called The Salty Rim. And so several of our clients knew Lee and said, you need to reach out to them. And then all of our clients have been on our podcast. But we didn't meet her until last week. But we weren't even really introduced until we met in Atlanta. Well, I met Allison.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone that works with you or for you. But at a conference, a random conference in Atlanta. And it was weird. We were doing this.
Made it worth the trip.
But it was definitely an awkward, like, it was a great exercise they made us do, but it was awkward where we had to run up and talk to people.
It was super awkward. Yeah, and I feel like we should get into that at some point.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, and but I ran up to, it was the last one, and I ran up to Allison, and I was like, where are you from? She said, Charleston, South Carolina. And we only had 15 seconds, so it was like, but after that, she made the introduction, and so here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. Thank goodness for Atlanta pulling Charleston together.
Isn't that so true? I know. So we are thrilled to have you on this podcast and learn about you and your business and your personal life. I mean, just kind of your background and your story. And because as we know, as entrepreneurs, business and personal often go super hand in hand. So let's do this. We'll stop talking and we'll turn the mic over to you, Lee, and ask you to take us back and tell us the story of how you got from way back there, wherever there was, to where you are now.
I feel like I need like a hip hop song in the background. That's like something about like all the way back.
Or like Goonies, where it's like, and then in the third grade, I remember that part. Yeah. Goonies?
No.
Okay.
I was with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and even if I wasn't, I would have lied and said that I was. That's what friends are for.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, great. So let's see.
So let's go
all
back.
The way back. Yeah. Okay, back into the beginning of time. Well, I'm from Charleston, and I feel like no one is from Charleston.
Not
like,
many. You were born here.
Like, born here. And my family, like, all my family since the beginning of time was born here, except for, jeez, like, generations and generations and generations ago, they lived in Scotland. But they basically, the Days family's been in Charleston since, like, the day that Charleston was a thing, it feels like.
So would people like you put Native sticker on the back of their car, or local?
Maybe other locals or natives would, but that feels so strange for me. So no, I would not do that.
Okay.
I don't want stickers on my car because I don't want to commit to anything for that long. And if I did, native wouldn't be my choice. But I'm sure people do. And
but are they really natives? I mean,
well,
like,
that's my question.
Yeah. Because you're very few. Now, people are being born here now.
Right.
Who will be considered natives of Charleston.
Yeah, they can hang with that title.
But your family literally started Charleston.
That's what I'm going to go with. My family discovered Charleston. Yeah,
it's a little bit like, if you're wealthy, like, you don't have to tell people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But if you're going around
true.
Telling people how much money you have, like, or subtly inserting it into conversations.
Yes.
You probably need to put native on the back of your car.
This is good advice, because I was going to drop how, like, wealthy and native I am a lot on this podcast. So I'm glad that we just got that out of the way.
Just get it out there. Yeah. Like, look, no, we're not pulling any punches.
I'm also
going to
name drop lots of celebrities.
Okay, perfect. Okay. We do actually really do like that. So
okay, great.
Any,
I don't have a lot of those stories, but I'm gonna drum some up. Okay, I'll make them up.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah, so beginning of the time, Charleston, and it just, you know, growing up seemed great, nice, you know, childhood, great city to be in. And I have like a million cousins. Many of them still live here. And now that you know that, you're going to run into like all of them. And
all the same last name?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, some of them, you know, married and different name, but they all still like hyphenate or it's in their middle name. Like, no one really lets go. And it's great, and a great city. I did a bunch of like private Catholic schools. I did live in Columbia, South Carolina for a little bit. Back to Charleston. Parents split when I was young. I kind of went back and forth from those two cities. And then my mom moved to Jersey. And so I went to a private Catholic school in Jersey for a while too. So I feel like I have just like the right amount of like Charleston and Jersey balance in my life.
That's a mixture.
Isn't it?
That's a cocktail right there.
Yeah, I feel like it really says a lot about who I am. And my cousins, a lot of them moved out to LA. So we're also kind of split between Charleston and LA. And that's also maybe a lot of my makeup, is that my family's kind of split between these like really sensible, smart careers, like, you know, real estate and banking. And then the other half, it's like potter and musician and actor and painter. And so there are these two different worlds of Charleston and LA, and then kind of the, you know, more corporate job and these more artsy jobs and the, you know, conservative and the liberal, and like everything's just this big dichotomy and the family dynamics, which is kind of neat. And then,
and you all get along.
We all come together like a normal, dysfunctional, great family. We all get along, and our family language is sarcasm. So it's like, the more you love one of your family members, the more you just wreck them. And then I've carried that into my personal life, and it usually flows well with other sarcastic people, and it also can just like break relationships. So
this is why I felt very familiar meeting you.
Right. Is that your language?
Well, I mean, I can hang sarcastically.
Right. And is your family like, can we just make this podcast about you? Tell me about your family.
Yeah. That's enough about you. Okay. Let's talk about me.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a cool. I'm thrilled to be from here. It's such a just a great environment. But I need to pull up a yearbook, but voted like least likely to stay in Charleston. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it was Charleston, South Carolina, U.S. Like I just wanted to be as far away as humanly possible and experience all the things. And my family is big into promoting travel, and like, you know, Christmas gifts and graduation gifts were oftentimes plane tickets, and
wow. Which I dig. You want to be a part of the Days family.
Right? Yeah, I might be overselling this just a little bit. You can come to Thanksgiving and test it out. But then I ended up going to University of South Carolina and kind of studying international relations, and I was, you know, paying a lot of my own way through school, so got into a lot of these fun fancy schools and fun fancy places, and was like, I just don't want to come out with a ton of debt. And thrilled that I ended up at South Carolina, because I've just always loved, you know, international relations, culture, and I really thought I wanted to go work for like an embassy or consulate, and I love Latin culture, and that's more of like what I studied at USC. And as luck would have it, I said I would go to school, I took a gap year, but I was never going to live in a dorm, and no one was going to make me, and so I got an apartment building, and it ended up being the international housing. So all my closest friends through college were from like Ecuador and Peru and Puerto Rico, and I was the only American in Columbia, South Carolina. So it's really funny. I forgot that about awesome. That. I had a friend visit from Spain recently who was part of that. She was like, you really and truly were the only American. I was like, I know, it was so fascinating. Mm-hmm. So I feel as if I like went to school abroad, but I didn't. Did not do that. And yeah, never thought I would come back, but Charleston just keeps like growing and changing in all the ways that for me, I would love for it to grow and change. And it's like just when I would get kind of bored with it, I would discover some new subculture, some new like group of people that are really fascinating, or, you know, and then through work, there's just all these cool things happening, all these great sectors that were being built out of nowhere, like the tech and the startup community and all these entrepreneurs and the product companies, like, you know, there's just a great art and cultural scene here that keeps growing through the years. So it just kept pulling me back, and now family, you know, kids, life, it's the forever thing. Yeah. But yeah, then after school, I was convinced I was just going to save the world. Like I had no idea how, but I wanted to go work for like a nonprofit or some kind of organization. And I thought that I would move to Ecuador where all my friends were, and like everything went wrong in Ecuador within the 2 months that I was supposed to move there. So they had this major earthquake, and the pollution, it was like bad to move into the town I was going to at that time. And then oddly enough, one of my best friends in college, shout out to Diego if you listen to this podcast. He never told anyone, but his father was president of Ecuador, and he came to South Carolina to kind of get away from that, so no one knew. And I found out after I graduated, and so I was going to go try to work with him. And then he got kicked out because he was, you know, trying to create moderation within the country, and they ousted him. So all this happened. I was like, okay, I'm not.
The country?
He got kicked out. Yeah, as happens when he was the president in those Latin countries. Yeah, just like, hey, things are too smooth and diplomatic right now. We need you to go so we can create more chaos. So he got kicked out. So all this was in 2 months. I was supposed to move.
Look at you and, dropping celebrities.
Right? See that? I didn't know I could do that so fast. I'm actually really proud. I'd like to take a moment for that. Yeah, thanks. And it's probably all just maybe relevant to my story in that I don't think I would have ever stayed in South Carolina or the States if that wouldn't have happened. It just kind of derailed my life plan.
Yeah.
And my life plan was to go on this political science route and all that. And then here I was back in South Carolina with like no money and no job and didn't know what to do for a career. So I worked for a few nonprofits, United Way, and then an HIV organization, and I loved it. I really wanted to go in this like social services field. But I was just always drawn to the marketers. I don't think I even really fully knew what marketing was. I took like a class maybe in college where marketing was 1/20th of what you talked about. And so just kind of getting in with them and shadowing them, and I thought it was really fascinating. And then I ended up working for this company called IMG, which I tell lots of just students who are thinking about marketing or events or anything. It's a great company, and it's really, you just learn so much in such a short period of time. And I got into golf marketing and golf events, and that kind of pushed me more down that line.
Hmm. And what year was this?
That was, I was probably like 23. Mm-hmm. I'm turning 40 next month, so okay, if so someone on this podcast does math, like, let me know what year that was, and I'd appreciate that.
Now everybody's listening, like, doing the math in their head. No, I can't do it. I can't give you the year. Yeah, Chase is trying to think of it.
It's really hard. It's really hard.
What, 17 years ago?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Something
that's
like
good.
That.
Yeah, 20, basic math, yeah. Not my thing.
See, I don't know. 27. Yeah. All right. So it was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Oh, I got to do that math.
Yeah, that's appreciate yeah. that. I still use my calculator for that stuff.
I use my hands. 17.
Oh, great. Yeah. Good on you for that.
2002. There yeah. we go. We yeah. have the year.
That's impressive you did that in your head, too, by the way. Yeah. So 2002. Okay, great. So look at us. We're really figuring this out. And then from there, I was kind of at this crossroads of...
I'm just trying to think back. So you were in college. You did mm-hmm. a gap year. You were supposed to go to Ecuador. And yep. then you ended up working for... So you graduated from college... 21.
It's super wonky. I'm going to totally mess up your math brain on this. So I had enough credits to take to graduate in only 3 years when I came in. I decided to do a gap year and to just blow that time away. And then I went in with 3 years, and even though I was at, or 3 years left, University of South Carolina, I think I only spent a year and a half there, maybe two. I did a semester at the Citadel, 1 year at College of Charleston, and a semester in Spain. Hmm. So I basically, I don't know anything about Carolina. Like, sorry, Carolina. They're great, great school. It's awesome. Everyone should go there, but I was hardly there.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And
their mascots, the Tigers.
Oh, it is. Yes, mm-hmm. I totally. Orange all day long. It's my favorite color. it was, and I was in it, and I did really enjoy it, but I certainly wasn't this, like, student that you met, and you were like, that chick's going places. You know, I did well and fine in school, but I've just always wanted to be on my own and working and out of the world. Hmm. And I was just kind of getting through it just to get out mm-hmm. into the workforce as soon as possible.
So how long were you at IMG?
Very short amount of time. Okay. Although I will say it's like being in a fraternity. Like, you know, I was definitely I think most of the events, you're like the only chick, you're by far the youngest, and it's like total frat hazing-ish, like trial by fire, and you are on location, so you're bouncing around from event to event and moving. So it's kind of like when you go spring break, feels mm-hmm. like you're gone for 4 months. Mm-hmm. Though I was probably only at IMG in totality maybe 6 to 9 months. I felt like I was there for 6 years, and it's definitely one of the most, I think, influential things that I did for that reason. And you... They are really good about those bigger companies like that. They move you up really fast. Mm-hmm. It's like the first event, you're making coffee. The second event, you're volunteer relations. The third event, you're managing all the players. The fourth event, you run the world. Mm-hmm. So you're just constantly, you know, sorting it out. And, it was great. It was a super... super cool experience, and there were lots of celebrity golfers that we could totally talk about one day. I have all the stories there. And I got out of that, and they had offered me the run the world job, and it was a great salary and for my age, but it meant I'd be living in Palm Springs half the year in Jersey, but everything goes back to Jersey half the year. And I was with my then husband, or we were dating, and we were at this crossroads of, like, what are we going to do? He was from New York. I'm from Charleston. I wanted to live in New York. He wanted to live in Charleston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ironically, we kind of wanted to switch, and he was sort of figuring out his career path. And in that same month, he was in personal finance. I was working for... IMG, and then we both launched our businesses in the same month and went into completely different fields. And so we were kind of learning entrepreneurship together, reading books together, had this very sort of humble beginnings that are always funny to look back on. And It was, like, we shared one Dell computer that would, like, always want to, like, catch on fire. And then we lived in this little basement apartment at Folly. And I would, like, take my calls from the beach and, like, lie to people and say I was in a wind tunnel. And we, like, shared, like, one closet that all of our business stuff was in. And we felt so official. And I'd, you know, work out of the little coffee shop that was also, like, a hot dog stand. And,
what,
like,
was your company, obviously?
It was, yeah. That was, these were the humble beginnings. Yeah. And it was fun. And then
so how many years ago was that?
So that was in 2005.
Okay. So that was three. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, I guess I was three or so years out of school. I might have messed you up on those dates. Math and
it's
me
fine.
And
it's
memory
fine.
And, you know, details. Yeah. I just like to say.
It wasn't 2 years ago. It was back.
Yeah. Okay. It was back in the day. Okay. Back in the day. And
what was his business?
He started as a cigar company, still has that cigar company, and so they do cigar wholesale. So they would sell to, at the time, grocery stores, and he just had this small, like, route in Charleston, and then he grew it and ended up doing, like, all the cigars distribution for, like, all the Vegas casinos and Jeez. Resorts all around the U.S., and then they do, like, cigar events, so he really ramped that company up, and now he has that company, and he also has a company called Shine, which is 24 karat gold rolling papers, and that does really well, and so it was fun. He was product, I was service, but we were kind of, like, silent partners in each other's businesses mm-hmm. and kind of growing it, and, we're not together romantically, but we are, as I like to say, soul friends, and we are, just, I think the fact that we had each other as those partners, like those, you know, that partnership through the years, not, you know, and both of us didn't really know anything coming mm-hmm. in. He was like mm-hmm. a psych and religion major. It was a great wow. thing. I always recommend, like, people just need you got to get the entrepreneur buddies as mm-hmm. soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for so many of my friends that are in it, and it yeah. just takes them a while to realize, like,
yeah.
everyone has all the same mm-hmm. nightmarish mm-hmm. things. So I was fortunate and that.
And so you're still friends?
Oh, besties. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we talk, mm-hmm. like, all the time. We have a big family dinner with my boyfriend, his girlfriend, all of our kids, all of our
That's
parents,
awesome.
Like, everyone's families come, and it's every Sunday, and we're all together at everything. It's, honestly, we need a reality show, so if I could take this time to pitch that idea, I think it would be really inspirational to the world. But, yeah, no, he's the greatest. We're all really tight. And
you have children?
I have a 6-year-old and basically an 11-year-old stepson, and they're great. They are not entrepreneurs yet, but just really, you know, fantastic little humans. And although my 6-year-old is obsessed with Shark Tank,
oh,
and he will definitely
really?
Let you know if your valuation is too high. And it does not come from us. We never watch Shark Tank, ever. And he found it on his own. And he is obsessed to the point that I've been trying to find where these guys are on, like, and girls, on a speaking tour so that I can bring him there. Because in his mind, he could care less about, like, Disney characters. But he is all in on meeting, like, Lori and Mark Cuban. And he makes me listen to Barbara has been on some podcast, and Damon had a podcast, and I would listen to it in the car, like, every morning ad nauseum, because
so
he's so
instead of
obsessed.
Listening to Kids Bop, he wants
yeah,
to listen to
could
Barbara.
Care less and, about yeah. yeah Kids Bop. He's all hip hop and like these random podcasts. He's such an interesting cat. So
I love that.
Yeah, we just like to produce
yeah.
weirdos.
Hey, this world needs more of those.
Right,
it's
agreed.
Yeah.
So excited. I'd be so bored if he wasn't a weirdo. it works out.
So you started obviously about 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And somewhere around then.
That's better math. That's real math.
Yeah. So so you started out of your home.
Yep.
And you learned, you got immersed in it in IMG. I mean, this is kind of like catching me up to where my brain needs to be. So really that was, how did people find you? Like, what did you do? Like, how did you set up your business? You did your
yeah.
own website and...
Great question. I don't even know if I had a website, now you say that. I don't remember when that actually happened. I really, at IMG, I was doing some marketing, but I was really more in, like, this golf events marketing space, and it's so different. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what the heck was going on, and I don't even know how I chose this industry. I don't remember ever being thoughtful or intentional about it, but I had kind of decided that I wanted to start a business, and then I had decided somewhere along the way that I was really into marketing. And I really just was freelancing because I wanted to get a marketing job, but because I didn't have enough like agency experience, I was applying to everywhere in Charleston and no one wanted to hang out with me.
What better way to get experience? Start your own company.
Yeah. And a lot of the places I applied to, they ended up becoming my competitors, or they, you know, phased out over time, which is funny. But I really was just trying to get experience so that I had a better shot of getting a job. Like, I wasn't intentionally starting this company. And then once I started kind of getting in the groove, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. No, like, I want to keep this thing going. And I think some just lucky things were, number one, Dave with the Scar Company, he had a partner at the time, and I, like, made them hire me because they had no choice. And I was cheap. And then I had a friend of a friend who knew someone who knew someone in New York, and it was, like, all these PR directors of all these top fashion houses had come together, and they were forming this cool, like, skateboarding and surf clothing brand. And I told him I was doing marketing. Somehow they trusted him, and he got me a meeting, and I found myself, like, in Manhattan for my first client pitch meeting ever, mind you. And I'm in some, like, fancy office in Soho, and, like, it belongs in, like, Sex and the City, some major show. And they're all in there, and they're so intimidating. And I always, like, equate it to, if you remember, in Good Will Hunting, when Ben Affleck goes in and he pretends to be Matt Damon, and he's just, like, wearing this, like, suit and totally faking it and using big words, and that's essentially what I did. And they bought it, and I still don't know why. Either I was really good or they were really stupid. And they...
I'm gonna go with you being really,
really good.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, I like this. This is good for my confidence. So they... I just pitched them on this idea that, like, I was the voice of the Southeast and they needed to launch there and it was very important and all the beach and the coastally stuff. And it's like, I feel like the one thing that's gotten me by my whole life is I'm just, like, a straight-up hustler. Like, I could totally sell Rolexes on a corner in New York, and I would just kill it. Or fake Rolexes. Like, I want to hustle. I don't want to scam people. I want everything to be real. But, like, I love the hunt and the fight and the newness and the gritty. And so I just gritted it out in my little, like, you know, $20 express outfit for all these top fashion-y people. Mm-hmm. And that worked. And then that helped, I think, kind of give me confidence after I did that project and kind of had figured it out. And it worked to then go and, like, pitch to other Charleston companies. And I had a lot of friends who were big agencies in New York. So they would, like, send me, like, a template for a press release or, like, their agency's contracts, and they were really building up my company, and I would just call them late at night and ask them, like, a million questions, and so that was super helpful.
So that's the other thing. I mean, as any entrepreneurs listening to this and you're getting a business started, I think there's a couple of really amazing things that you've said. Number one, have your entrepreneurial buddies. Like, that is so huge to be able to remember that you're not alone and the things that you're dealing with. Like, and you know, this podcast is about me, so we're going to bring it back to me. Just kidding. but we're going through something right now where we've talked to three different people in the last week, and they're saying, oh, we've been through the same thing. And there's something really calming about that, where you're like, God, we thought it was just us, and we thought what we're dealing with is so absurd. But when you hear, oh no, that's normal, then there really is, that's very, to me, that's helpful for stress levels to go, okay, this is super stressful, but it's not the first time that somebody has gone through this. And so that's really important. The second thing that I think is really important that you said is having a network, and again, it's all about relationships, right? But having a network of people who have been who have done what you're doing already, right? That you can lean into and go, okay, this is what I need. Do you have it? A press release template or whatever. There's a lot of that on Google now, but to get it from somebody who's already done it, and this is what I've used and this is what works, is so helpful to me. Like, I think that those two pieces, I think everybody, we all think that we need to do it
on our own. Like, we need to have everything figured out. Yeah. We need to have all the answers. And that's not true.
Like, I totally agree. Yeah, I'm super passionate about just, like, the mental health aspects of entrepreneurship and the importance of being mindful of that. I think that a lot of people who get into that world, you're already so self-competitive. And then, so when you're not performing at high expectations, I think we all have ridiculous expectations of ourselves and the company and the day and everything. There's just this, like, real shame element that seems to come, at least from all so the entrepreneurs that I know. I have a lot of friends that are, and most of our clients, you know, through the last 14 years are entrepreneurs. So it's like, you know, maybe 500. And that's such a common theme just of the constant beating yourself up on, well, someone else could have done this better, or maybe I'm not good enough at this, or I should know better, and all that stuff. And then it's great when you get in with your buddies and they're like, no, dude, that happened to me too.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, everyone's been through it. And so I think just even for that, it's, you know, just to get out of that. I mean, they said, like, I think it's the most concentrated pool of people that are highly depressed or founders in Silicon Valley. And, you know, I think just it's because there's not, it's such a competitive space too, that I imagine you don't have as much your buddy network, maybe. That's my assumption, but Charleston's great in that, and that there are a lot of, you know, communities, but everywhere has that. And there's so many, like, national communities now that you can, through EO and, you know, all these other groups where you can get tapped into a forum of some kind. I think those resources are. And then just finding, like, people who are, like you said, like, already done it, and just make them your friend. I mean, it's such an honor for someone to be asked, like, hey, I look up to you and want to do what you're doing one day. And I always feel like if you reach out to 10 people, I bet 9 of them are going to say, sure.
Exactly.
I know when people have reached out to me, like, you know, I'd love to have coffee with you once a quarter or whatever, I'm like touched, like, fantastic, like, how boring for you, how fun for me. And I think most people probably have that outlook. And I was really lucky. I had kind of one of my first clients, he kind of took me under his wing, and we're now really great friends, and or have been the whole time. But we had a standing lunch every Tuesday for like 6 years, and I got to go to him with all my things. And then he kind of got this sort of different perspective of maybe a younger budding entrepreneur of, like, you know, this is the here and the now and what my experience here. And he'd had his business for a lot of years. And I think that connection between new businesses and established businesses is so healthy for each other.
You're both
just doing that awesome give and take, which is nice.
Yeah, I agree. So, so what's a typical client for you, and what's typical work that you do? Is there a typical or no?
Yeah, somewhat. I always like to kind of just boil it down to, we just want to grow super cool companies. So, and where we, I think, perform best is that there is, there's a story that's untold or that needs to be told better. And, or there is, there's something that we can sell, like, especially online, whether it's a product, selling tickets to an event, getting people to book a hotel room, lease an apartment, download a piece of software. So the industry doesn't, you know, necessarily matter as much. We definitely have certain, like, industries that we do a lot of work in those spaces. But the things that we all get just kind of jazzed about are, we just want to work on something that, first off, we like, you know, that there's some kind of connection on, you know, whatever that product or service is. And oftentimes it's just the people behind it. And then we get the opportunity to kind of tell those stories, you know, through messaging and branding and experiential and bringing that all to life. Or it's like, oh, there's an opportunity here. Like, we could, like, really, with the right tools, rock this thing on, like, another level and, like, really grow it. So those are, that's, you know, everything so kind of fits into that.
Are you all encompassing? Are you doing branding, marketing, SEO, social media, website, all of it?
All the things. Yeah, and I firmly believe, like, we've talked a lot about being hyper-specializing in certain areas, especially the more that the industry changes and evolves over years. I just don't think that's an option anymore. Like, you really have to understand every aspect to make any one of the aspects fully work. And it's also why we don't hire hyper specialists. So most firms grow by having, like, here's your SEO person, here's your PR person. And everyone in our office is super multidisciplinary. We hire more for just, like, are you really creative? Are you really strategic? Are you a problem solver? are you not an asshole? Are you fun? Can we all hang out with you? And also just, you know, are you curious and, you know, really into like innovation? Because our industry will keep changing. So if you're really set in your thing, your thing's probably not even going to be a thing in like 2 years. Right. But you could still be like super relevant within our company because you'll ebb and flow with the industry. I always equate it to like, you know, years ago, like people would hire like the best Flash developers. We're the best at Flash. Here's our best Flash developer. Well, how many people had to let all those people go because like Flash wasn't a thing anymore, or those people just totally reinvented themselves and got ahead of it. So we all kind of, you know, try to be more, I think of it more as like building the right think tank. And then I think second about what is your hyper skill. And it's just a great, you know, it brings out the best ideas. Like you can't be a great designer if you don't understand how that thing's going to perform digitally and in print, and you can't be great at PR if you don't understand what they're going to do once they read that article and like how it all fits in. And then everyone kind of has to understand what makes that business tick to make sure that we're moving it towards the right goal. I think there's lots of marketing companies out there that do these really great things that like get a client on the cover of a magazine, or they win awards for their website or their design or whatever it is, and then the company goes out of business the next year. It's like if these things aren't laddering up to the main goal, you know, if you didn't have enough product at that time when we went and launched your campaign, and then you're out of inventory. If you, you know, we exploded sales in a restaurant or a hotel, but you were understaffed at the time, and then you got all these poor service ratings that hurt you in the future. Like, we just have to dig in with our clients to be like, does this make sense right now? What are we really trying to do? Like, where are we going? And then connect the dots in from there. So it's kind of like, honestly, becoming partners in it with them and a part of their team, which is great. And I would recommend that to anyone who ever works with a marketing company. It's like the more vulnerable you can get, the more you can share, the better job that they can do to kind of, you know, really match up to that.
If somebody's looking for a marketing firm, kind of piggybacking on what you just said, what are red flags that they should avoid from specific marketing firms?
That's a great question. I always think about in return or in the reverse, like what are red flags for clients or companies? And I haven't thought about as much in that, you know, way before, but I think that just anyone who is really touting all their awards and all their accolades, I would just want to know, are those businesses around anymore? Are they still talking to you? Like, can I call them? Like, what was the experience? I think companies that have had a lot of longevity with clients, you know, a lot of our clients we've had for 10 plus years, and it's hard because you have to reinvent yourself every year, you know, make it fresh, but it's awesome because you just have, you know them so well that you can, you know, kind of fast track things. So I think just having those really great relationships, you would want to know that that's in place and that they're going to be really honest about what they're not good at. You know, if a client comes to us and they're like, hey, can you take on this thing? And we have this other business. And by the way, I'll give you 200 grand. I have to have the control to say, we can't take that money. Like, I actually don't think we're the best at that. You need to call, you know, so-and-so down the street, maybe. And then you build up that trust with them. And also just making sure that they know how to spend your money like it's their money, and that they're not just, you know, motivated by getting you to up your spend. I think a lot of the traditional old ad agency model is so stupid to me. You're really, they're getting paid off of making their clients buy more, because if you do a percentage of like ad spend, then you're encouraging them to spend more money on advertising, whereas the best fit might actually be not to, but of course you're incentivized because that's the payment situation. So I think a lot of that stuff is getting just sort of auto-corrected, but I would want to make sure that they are motivated by the same thing that I'm motivated by. So when we're all judging results at the end of the year, you know, we're on the same page with that.
I love the fact that you're, to me, you're a solutions company. I mean, you're a marketing firm, but the fact is, I mean, what I heard, and I love this, because people try to keep as much as they can, you know, and, but if you can't do the service for someone because there's somebody else that can do it better, and you say, no, you need to go to them, to me, I'm going to trust you more.
Yeah.
I've work with so many companies, they're like, no, we'll figure it out, even though we haven't done it before.
Yeah.
You end up spending more time and wasting more money trying to figure it out than offering a solution to, or they say, I can't do it, and they don't have a solution for anyone because they don't want to send them to a competitor.
Yeah.
To me, I always say that I'm not a competitive person. I'm more with myself than anything, but with everybody else that are in the market, it's not about that. It's about who we can help. And if I can't do it for someone, somebody else out there can. So might as well just send them there. Because they're going to trust you in the end to say, you know, thank you for that mm-hmm. referral. And that I remember those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that to say is I like how you said that. You know, like sometimes we just say we can't do it, and so I'll refer them out. And I've done it, and a lot of companies go, we can't do it, and good luck finding someone.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, especially because a lot of our clients are built on retainer systems and we stay with them for years. The trust thing is so key, mm-hmm. you know? And we fired ourselves a lot. Like, hey, I actually am doing the math and I'm thinking about this and the services that you have us on now. You should go hire a junior person internally. We'll help you write the job description. We should transition out in 2 months. If you guys end up going multi-unit, if you end up going into multiple markets, bring us back in and we'll do strategy and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had those clients and they've left, did that, and then they come back a year later mm-hmm. and they're like, okay, we're ready. And then we're on yeah, such a bigger that. Level with them. And it just... And they become friends, and I care about them and their businesses, too. Mm-hmm. So you're just mindful of the fact of, am I hurting their bottom line right now? You know, am I going to be one of the things that they look back on and go, man, I shouldn't have done that expense. Like, that really took me under. Or are we majorly helping it? And they're going to look back mm-hmm. on it and be like, thank goodness that we partnered up with them because we scaled, you know, because of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be in the person's, you know, book in case they turned like Google one day is like in the chapter of things that were really helpful and not mm-hmm. the big mistakes that I made along the way chapter. So
14 years you've been in business, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you are defying all the odds of, you know, most small businesses go out of business in the first year, or if they last through that, then the 5 years they're done. But 14 years is amazing. You've seen probably an industry really change, I would imagine. But as you've been in your 14-year journey, can you think back to a big highlight of your career? And then the flip side of that is has there been like a time where you thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't think I'm mm-hmm. where it's been just a really deep challenge for you.
See, this is the entrepreneurial thing that when you did the first one, the highlight, I was like, let me search my brain. And then when you did that, I don't want to do this anymore. I was like, how do I pick which one of these answers that I want to give you?
That's so true.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the easier one first, which are, you know, hurdles or I don't want to do this. And I was so lucky I was 25. Like, I just had nothing to lose. You know, you can just be just go for it and live on ramen and not care and not have to worry about, you know, a mortgage or kids or life or retirement. So I really honor and admire the people who are doing it in their 30s and their 40s and, you know, boyfriend / business partner, he started his endeavor in his early 40s, and just watching him do it and how smart it is and strategic it is and thoughtful it is. Like, he's going to do things in like 2-3 years. It took me like 10 years to do. So anyway, on that, I would say that the blessing and the curse was me being so young mm-hmm. because it really took me a long time to learn some of the basics.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if I had more to lose, I would be a little bit more thoughtful of the timeline around it. And then the blessing was that, you know, you just freaking go for it. And then there was definitely a moment. Everything to me has always been fun. Like, I love it. I wake up. I'm thrilled. I want to go into the office. I love the work. I've been super excited. There's been very few points where, even when it was just god-awful, that I would want to be doing something different. And I thrive kind of in chaos and challenge. And that's kind of when I come alive to, like, figure out my way out of it, maybe. But I would say going through a recession as a service-based business, and our clients at the time were all so not recession-proof,
mm-hmm.
and that was a disaster. I had within maybe, I think it was in 1 month, I had a business partner at the time, it was just time for us to kind of part ways. It didn't make sense anymore. He left, and by maybe no fault of his own, though slightly careless, we had gone to an accountant to, for all the entrepreneurs out there, we'll auto get this, and for everyone else, I'll explain it, that we had accidentally deemed ourselves a C Corp instead of an S Corp. Hmm. And she was like, Mayday, this is a problem. You're going to end up owing so much in taxes that you shouldn't pay. You shouldn't be a C Corp. There's just two of you, like, as a membership. And so we, or I think we should have been an LLC. And so we filled out all the paperwork, we signed it, she stamped it, all we had to do was get it in the mailbox. And he delivered it to me on the day that he left and was like, oops. So I was given this piece of paper that basically said a time where we had like hardly any cash flow, we were trying to figure everything out, that we owed, I don't even remember, but like somewhere between 30 and 50K in taxes, which is just like...
Which could have totally been avoided.
At that time. Yeah. Totally been avoided. And then that leads to all these IRS things, and it was a nightmare. And, like, the last thing you ever want is, like, the IRS all up in your bank account or in your life or everything, and, like, keeping that at bay. And, you know, newsflash, they're not, like, the easiest people to talk to and to get on the phone and to, like, figure things out with. They don't really want to go to couples counseling with you. So that was a struggle. And right in the heart of that, we were going through the recession. Mm. And I had to dig out for cash flows to keep, I think we had maybe, like, three team members in to make sure that they stayed. And my biggest thing has always been, like, I do not ever want to have to let go of a team member because I couldn't figure out finances. Like, I built so much of a company just around that one principle because a lot of old school agencies, they just don't care. Like, people or whatever, it's all about getting that big account, and we're the opposite. So that was super important to me, and I think that's always been a thing that's pushed me forward. But we're in a recession at the exact same time. I had to get out of our lease, and like a little angel, one of my buddies came in with this proposition that their company had to let a bunch of people go and they needed marketing. We needed office space, and I couldn't afford any expenses right then, so we traded out office space for marketing, and I thought it was going to be a hot minute. Ended up being 3 years, but that totally brought my business back to life.
Wow.
Because it took away some of these major expenses, and I wasn't crafty enough then to figure out how to cut expenses in other categories, so it just was super helpful. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that that thing happened with him and the accounting, because it made me, I was running like a lifestyle business, and I was just on the account side, and I didn't have to think about the back end and accounting and operations and all that, and I had to like get in there and sort it out, and it made me more knowledgeable so that I felt more confident being on my own. But I was scared because I was like, I don't know this side of things. Like, this isn't my jam. So that was definitely one. And then a couple years ago, I definitely hit kind of a lull. I'm really glad I did because it helps me relate to my team members when I can feel that they're hitting a lull of just like, I need like a refresher of some kind. And I've had that myself. I get it. And it just, it kind of started to feel a little bit like, this is great. I shouldn't complain. This is so awesome. But I feel like I've been kind of doing the same thing for a while. And I think that that kind of took us down this path that we created a kind of a venture arm where we trade out services for equity of companies. And so we did it with a software company, then we did it with a beer company. And then I'd come in as like a partner or on the board or kind of just depending what the arrangement is. So then I got to go back into startup of an industry I didn't know, which was software and in like government space. And then I got to go into an industry we've worked in a lot with clients in the beer space, but I'd never been, you know, in that kind of partnership. And
so you're doing marketing for equity.
Marketing for equity. And then I'm also coming in as an individual to kind of be one of the founding partners to grow it. So operations and sales and, you know, all the details of how are we going to find an office or set up phones or hire employees or, you know, all that stuff in the beginning too, until kind of the... you know, founders had enough staff and support that, you know, that part usually kind of fades out. And that really got me like jazz and going again. But it was a major time suck and it was a distraction from our company. So now I'm kind of in this reverse mode of like really excited to just go back in and hyper focus a lot on, you know, obviously in day to day. And I think it's just a good thing for entrepreneurs to think about. Like sometimes you do just need to like, I would say like if you're sitting in the middle of the snow globe, you just need someone to come and shake it up for you.
Yep.
But then, you know, sometimes it just gets a little bit, thinking about those decisions to make sure they're not such a distraction takes you away from the company, but mm-hmm. to find things that inspire you again mm-hmm. to make you want to kind of like, you know, go back in.
Yeah. So what do you do for your employees or your team? I've never heard you say employees. So your team, when they get in that lull, what are things that they do to kind of go and get a fresh breath of air and then come back refreshed?
I think just a few things are, we're just open. I think it's the first thing, you know, like, let's just have a combo. You know, like, I pull people aside and been like, I know you want to move, you know, or I know you're hitting a lull. Like, let's just talk about it. Or they'll, you know, hopefully feel comfortable talking to me. And sometimes they need to do a total shift of roles within our own company. Like, mm-hmm. we've had people that, you know, maybe they're a project manager and now they're in business development. Or maybe mm-hmm. they're an account executive and now they're on the branding and the creative side. Or, you know, going from design to web or whatever that might be. Sometimes it's shift up the accounts. You know, is there an account you're just mm-hmm. really just not into? Or a client that you're not jiving with, let's just figure out how to switch all that up. Or maybe, you know, it's kind of trying to figure out how to tailor the world a little bit more to them. I feel like when people are connected into their passion points, they mm-hmm. just thrive in such yep. a bigger way. Mm-hmm. So instead of kind of forcing them into what we want, it's like, what do you want? Can those two yeah. things work together? They don't always. And then we just have a good combo about, hey, I dig you, you dig us, this is what we need, this is what you need, let me help you go get there, mm-hmm. and maybe you'll come back a year or two from now or not. And we've had, you know, those situations before. And so I think it's just, a lot of it is companies just get in their own flipping way. It's mm-hmm. like everyone's mm-hmm. making it so corporate-y and so weird yeah. and so, like, bogged down and, like, everyone's just, you know, playing the role of, like, what they saw in the movie of what a CEO should be. And I feel right. like if you just get down and vulnerable and open, everything just works out mm-hmm. so much better.
Yeah. yeah. It's not about being... a lot of people go to work being fearful.
Yeah, right.
That they could lose your job. And so having that open communication and that transparency with your team, you're going to be able to keep them. Or if they... But if they're not meant to be there, they leave and you can still be friends.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. I like it.
And I think, too, to your point, entrepreneurs are typically pioneers. I mean, they're scrappy. They're, you know, super resourceful as type A personality, typically. But oftentimes when they grow their business to a certain size, they don't get to be that anymore.
Right.
Because you have yes. to elevate yourself mm-hmm. up to, like, uh-huh. managing people as opposed to being in the weeds, the day-to-day weeds. So I loved what you said, because I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs who feel, quote unquote, burnt out, and all they need is a refresher. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They need to step outside of their business for a little, maybe even just a week or a month or yeah. something, and not remove themselves completely. But I think it's oftentimes if you, you know, get tired of your home, mm-hmm. go away on vacation and stay somewhere yeah. else. And then you always come back to, ah, like, this is home. Mm-hmm. And you appreciate it more.
It's yeah. such a great example. That's just another thing I would say, too, about team members and refreshers. We put in this sabbatical that once people are there for 5 years, like, just to get an extra big block of time, and we want you to use it consecutively. So, like, just go away for, like, 2 to 4 weeks and do an adventure. And now we're trying to figure out, like, how do we just do that more often along the way? But we encourage, like, the big trips and the big chunk. And, like, our managing director right now is in Morocco for 2.5 weeks. And then someone, you know, was just in Maine for a few weeks, or someone somewhere else. And it's just, like, let people go travel and
fill their souls
and wake yep. up mm-hmm. again, you know.
Yeah, that's what my point was. Do you allow them to go and do that where they're not having to be there from 9 to 5 and punch a clock? I mean, to yeah. me... That mm-hmm. going back, if I ever had to go back into the corporate world, I would don't want to do that ever again.
Right.
I will find something to do. I will
yeah.
sell pencils downtown Charleston.
Yes.
You know, just because totally. I have no desire to sit in an office and punch a clock for anybody ever again.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's a super hard balance because mm-hmm. you have deadlines and you have projects and
right.
you have to think about capacity and profitability and all and the cash flow mm-hmm. management. So it's a tricky thing of, like, what my personality is, everyone do whatever they want. Be free. You're all adults. Everyone enjoy. Like, I don't even care. Don't even check in with me. Like, just have a great life. And then, but the reality is the balance in the mm-hmm. middle.
Right.
Like, yes, we want to offer all these things. And as long as X, Y, and Z is happening, then all these things, you
right.
know, you
yeah.
self-manage that stuff. And It gets harder and harder as the team gets bigger and bigger, because there's always, like, you know, the one kid who wants to test the boundaries on one thing, and then you end up creating house rules for everyone, mm-hmm. but you really right. just need to sit that one kid down and be like, dude, can't do that anymore. Yeah. So, like, that thing is a tricky balance, I feel like, for the rest of time, but for the most part, it's, you know, just... And creating a culture where everyone just kind of checks each other. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hey, buddy, like, we need to get this thing together,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, we don't do that here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love it. All right, we need to wrap this up. All right. So fun
Great.
Talking
this
with you.
Fun.
Went quick, didn't it?
It does, God. Yeah.
Yeah, it always does. Okay, we have a list of questions, 1 to 70. Give Statoya one number between 1 and 70, and she'll give you the question associated with it, and then me, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay, great. I'll go 26.
If you could be an Olympic athlete, what sport would you compete?
Oh, gosh. I don't know a lot of sports, but I'm totally going to do synchronized swimming. Is that a thing?
It is.
Okay. Yes. Great.
Really? You had the nose clip and the...
Do they have nose clips? I might want to rethink this, but I'll go with my first answer.
All right. Synchronized swimming.
Yeah.
What is it about it that you like?
I don't know. It's fascinating to me.
But
how did they get into that?
But you look like you would have the arms.
Oh,
and,
good. Yeah. Yeah, I'll work the arms. I just think it's interesting. Like, I feel like the other women would be, like, really interesting personalities that, like, they grew up wanting to be synchronized swimmers.
Yeah, how does that happen?
I don't know.
I would love to talk to a synchronized swimmer and just this from when you were like 4? Like you wanted to do this or is it a new thing?
We could all get really into this and go meet a bunch of them and all form a team
should.
Together. Yeah.
We could do it on our next podcast.
Yeah. I don't want to form a team, but I'll choreograph your moves.
I can't swim. I would drown. Yeah.
All right, 1 to 70. What's your number?
Okay, 10.
10. 3 pet peeves that you have.
Oh my gosh. How much time do we have?
I knew it.
I'll try to be fast. Well, I can tell you my number one, which is I definitely have misophonia, which is a thing where you can't. Misophonia is a thing for people. It is scientific. Do not pretend it's not. Which is you get annoyed by certain sounds, and it's mainly people eating.
Yeah. Chewing.
Ugh, yeah. The person next to me on the plane popping their gum. The person in a meeting whose, like, chips are loud, or, like, if they, like, lick their fingers. That one to me is so big, I'm going to make it 1, 2, and 3. So it is, like, the popping of the gum. And the chips, to the point that when we order, like, catered lunches and for our team, I always make them sub out the chips for, like, something soft, like a pasta salad, because I can't handle a room full of 15 people eating chips at the same time. I might just implode. So that one's
just...
It's
almost giving me anxiety just to hear that.
Maybe you have it. Like, it's genetic. You can get tested to see if you have it.
And it's called misophonia.
Misophonia. And I have heard this, so I haven't done it, but if you do, like, a 23andMe, they can tell you if you have it.
No, it's only the big swallows. When people do smacking gum, but if people do a big swallow, I'm like,
which me, I do big swallows all the time.
Or when you suck on pudding or something like that.
It's crunching or chewing.
Just all those noise. So okay, my fast ones would be that. I'll give that as a whole category. I don't know if it's a pet peeve, but, like, I hate parking garages. They don't make sense to me. They make me feel claustrophobic, and I always run into things. I always have big dents on my cars, and so I just don't like them. And the third is just people who are entitled, like, in general. Yeah. Like, if we could just form a separate universe that they could all go be entitled together in a big old entitled land, and the rest of us could just all hang out and help each other, that would be my little utopia.
I love that.
I'd join that world.
Great.
I mean, hopefully not the entitled world. Mm-hmm. Hopefully your world.
Yeah,
utopia.
Our synchronized swimming world of non-entitlement. And
everybody
no
crunching.
No gum.
No gum and no chips.
Great. Mm-hmm. I like this world.
Lee, we won't ask
her to go get Mexican with us next week.
No, it's
chips
cool.
And salsa?
I have a feeling that you're mindful. It's not everyone. It's only if I know that you're an annoying eater, then it gets on my nerves. But if you're not and a chip is really loud, it doesn't bother me because I know that you couldn't help it. It's really, it's a messed up thing. But I should stop talking about this. I should end on something that makes me sound like a more normal human.
I think that's pretty nice. I think a lot of people are guilty of this, but there are way more people who get annoyed by open mouth chewers or stuff like that. You know, it's like, that was like, that was like childhood 101, close your mouth when you're eating.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you're an open mouth chewer, please I mean, just close your mouth. Close your mouth. Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
All right. So fun. So much fun, really, truly. And you have established a business that's very respected in Charleston and beyond. And so thank you for doing what you do and for persevering through the hard hurdles and impacting and building really cool companies with people.
So, thanks. I appreciate good stuff. That.
You got it. All right, listeners, thanks as always for hitting play. You know, we love it when you do. If you like this podcast, share it with people, not because we want to be huge and famous, but just because we get really cool people on, like Lee Daz.
That's my favorite.
There you go.
Yeah. Had some kind of accent on
there. Daz.
Yeah, great.
Daz. All right, go make it an awesome day.